Hare Krishna. So on this very auspicious appearance, disappearance day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, we're going to be reading, and there's a lot of information about His Divine Grace, but I wanted to just read a few things from the Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhava, as given to us by Bhakti Vikash Swami. It's an excellent book. It has a lot of, just a whole lot of nectar about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And obviously, because we don't have time, we can't even touch a fraction of it. He's such an incredible personality. So I just took the liberty of taking out a few excerpts here and there. Just some nectar things about his life. We've heard so many things about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj over the years, being the inspiration and spiritual master of our dear Srila Prabhupada. Not enough can be said about how he went about his preaching activities. Very active from the very beginning. And of course, much of that has to do to the wonderful guidance that he was given by his father, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and his spiritual master, Srila Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj. Which helps us to understand how important it is to have guidance. Not enough can be said about that, how important it is to have proper association, and what the responsibility of a parent is, and what the responsibility of a spiritual master is. There's a lot... there's a lot there. In the case of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj Prabhupada, he was very fortunate to have Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, his father, from the get-go, encouraged him to chant at a very early age. And we can see this also in proper Vaishnava families, that from the very beginning they're encouraged to engage in devotional activities, as in the case of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was at an early age encouraged by his father to engage in Rath Yatra, for instance. So from the very beginning, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur made chanting a compulsory activity for Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And he encouraged him to worship the Nrisimha deity, which is also important. And we see that in the example of Srila Prabhupada also, that Srila Prabhupada encouraged us from a very early time in ISKCON to take shelter of Lord Nrisimhadev for guidance and protection. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also encouraged his son to worship the Nrisimha deity. In the course of building their home in Bhakti Bhavan, one very interesting thing happened, and that was that a Kurma deity was unearthed. They found it in the ground. And typically, when something like that happens, when a Shila would be found, it would be given immediately to a Brahmin family. But in this case, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj, he wanted the deity. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur relented and allowed him to keep that deity. Now, the significance of that deity is that it's described that the Kurma deity is associated with Adbhuta Ras, or the Rasa of Mellow Ras. And what that is that that rasa makes all other rasas newly wonderful. And in other words, it complements other rasas to make them more exciting and more wonderful. And that's best exhibited in the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described. That in Chaitanya Lila, Krishna comes as Chaitanya to experience his wonderfulness, his own wonderful qualities and activities. And the Lord appeared in that form, attempting to taste the wonderful activities of devotional service. And to make that even more relishable, to make that rasa even more relishable, it becomes more relishable when that experience of bhakti is shared and distributed with others. And for this reason, the Lord appeared, and especially this deity is relishable. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, as described by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, that when Lord Chaitanya would experience all of the mellows of devotional service, what did he do? Does anyone know? He took on the form of Kurma. It's very interesting. This is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was experiencing the full mellows of devotional ecstasy, all of the different rasas, it was exhibited, or he took on a form or the aspect of a Kurma avatar, which is very fascinating. And there's a very nice purport in this regard, in the very beautiful purport to a verse. This purport is attributed to Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj in the 12th canto. There's a verse that reads, "When the Supreme Personality of God had appeared as Lord Kurma, a tortoise, his back was scratched by the sharp-edged stones lying on massive whirling Mount Mandara, and this scratching made the Lord sleepy. May you all be protected by the winds caused by the Lord's breathing in this sleepy condition. Ever since that time, even up to the present day, the ocean tides have imitated the Lord's inhalation and exhalation by piously coming in and going out." Purport, and this is referencing Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, "The breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can alleviate the itching sensation within the minds of mental speculators, as well as the itching of the material senses of conditioned souls engaged in sense gratification. Thus, by meditating on the windy breath of Lord Kurma, the tortoise incarnation, all categories of conditioned souls can be relieved of the deficiencies of material existence and come to the liberated spiritual platform. One must simply allow the pastimes of Lord Kurma to blow within one's heart like a favorable breeze. Then one will surely find spiritual peace." What a beautiful purport. I just couldn't. It was incredible. 12th canto? This is Sudha Goswami speaking right at the end of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right at the very end. The last four or five verses. And Sudha Goswami is speaking to the sages. And he's offering wonderful prayers and benedictions to the sages. It's really, really excellent. Again, it's in the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, the last chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this deity is obviously very, very special. It's also exhibited in Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's life that he was a very serious, he had a very serious nature. When he was just 7 years old, one reputed Babaji commented to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that your son, he did not offer obeisances when he saw me. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur responded by saying that he doesn't offer obeisances to Sahajiyas. So from the very beginning, even at a young age, he was just one young boy, practically 7 years old, right? And the Bhagavatam, of course, teaches us, Komara Dacharat Progyo Dharma Bhagavatam, you have from the very beginning, one should be encouraged and engaged in a devotional life. And again, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was that sort of a good parent. That even at such an age, his son was very serious. Even at that age, he was already translating from Sanskrit to Bengali. He was already doing some translations. And for that reason, he was given the title of Living Encyclopedia. And throughout his life, as a teenager, he was very much engaged in devotional activities, although he also had his scholarly side. And his father encouraged him to have his quote-unquote secular education. So he was very scholarly and was very good in school. Up to the age of 21 is described that he was very learned, he was very honored and respected. But at age 21, he got tangled with, he had an issue with a principal. And in that time, during that time period, it was unheard of or considered disgraceful to leave school. Wouldn't even consider it. But at age 21, he left. And his reasoning was that if I remain studying, browbeaten, I'll be browbeaten to enter family life. If I can, in other words, if I continue doing with this education, I'll be obliged to take up householder life. But if I am perceived to be foolish and good for nothing, then no one will put this inducement on me for worldly advancement. To maintain my life, I'll simply take an honest job with modest income. So that was his mentality. He continued like that for some years. At the age of 23, again, he was a very austere and strong personality. At the age of 23, he began to very strictly follow Chaturmasya. And if anyone knows anything about Chaturmasya, it's very... Sir Das knows about it. He's we used to, in St. Louis, eat Havishan, and that was the extent of it. But Chaturmasya, a very austere time when one has to perform all sorts of austerities. And he followed it to the T, to the point where he became emaciated. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his father, told him, okay, you don't have to do this. You don't have to be like this. And so then at that point, he backed off a little bit from his practices, but continued following Chaturmasya until... and then at the age of 24, it's described that he was given initiation by Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj. And we've heard that wonderful story in past time, how he approached him numerous times Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj finally relented after three or four times. He was waiting for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to give him a signal that, yes, I'll take on this disciple. So finally, he relented and gave Srila Bhakti Sanatana Maharaj initiation. And again, continued on with his devotional activities. And began to become very active in preaching Krishna consciousness, assisting Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in some of his writings, some of his translations, some of his preaching activities. Actually, at one point, one person came up to him and asked him that as a Ghosti Anandi, and Ghosti Anandi we know is one who goes out and preaches, traveling preacher, your whole life is different from your spiritual master, who is a Bhajan Anandi. Why is this? How is it that you've become a Ghosti Anandi and your spiritual master was a Bhajan Anandi? And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj Prabhupada commented that it's just like a boat, boat engine. The boat engine is clanking, it's whirling, it's making all sorts of sounds, right? But next to that engine is a battery, which is very silent. So my guru was sitting and chanting and didn't mix with all sorts of people. But he was the battery for all of my activities. It's a very wonderful example. And he stated that without him, I am nothing. So just see the importance of the spiritual master and disciple relationship. And we see that also in the example of Srila Prabhupada. That Prabhupada never took any credit for anything he did. He was always offering that credit to his spiritual master, who was guiding him and was his inspiration. There's a very wonderful, I think this is, I'm trying to remember my notes here. He likened it to the example of Ramanuja. Does anyone remember that particular comparison that he made? I'm trying to remember exactly. I'm sorry, I don't remember that exact pastime. But he likened his activities to the activities of Ramanuja, who delivered many many people, right? He, despite the apparently transgressing the instruction of his Ghosti Purna, right? His spiritual master. Ghosti Purna told him that he shouldn't. He'd take this Om Namo Narayanaya mantra, keep it to yourself, don't distribute it. If you chant it, you'll be liberated. But instead, he took it and went out into the streets and immediately began yelling it out to the public. And his guru, Ghosti Purna, told him, he became very angry at this. And what did he say? You'll go to hell for this? You'll go to hell for this, for transgressing the order of the spiritual master. So Ramanuja's response was that, if I can deliver all of these persons to the spiritual world, I will gladly go to hell. And when his guru heard this, then he understood that, actually, you're fit, you're qualified to become my spiritual master. So this whole experience was related. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was trying to equate his own life to that example, and how it was actually by the inspiration of Gorkhashwadas Babaji Maharaj that he was able to do anything. It's described here also that he traveled quite extensively up to the age of 31. And at that age, he decided that he was going to plant himself in Nabadweep, and he would chant on 1 billion names of the Lord. This vow took him quite some time. It's described it took him 9 years to fulfill this vow that he had made to chant 1 billion names of the Lord. He took Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's beads that he himself had, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had himself chanted 1 billion names on. So he took those beads for himself, and he proceeded to chant for the next 9 years. Of course, he engaged in still some missionary activities, but during that time, he was focused on chanting those names. 1 billion, you can imagine. It takes 9 years. In 1914, 1915, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Gorkhashwadas Babaji Maharaj respectively left this world. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was feeling great separation and was lamenting that how will the preaching go on. He felt in their absence he didn't feel the inspiration to continue, and he actually decided that I'm just going to go and shut myself up. I'm going to stay in the house, and I'll just continue with my own work, my self improvement, as opposed to going out and doing his missionary work. But that night, he had a dream. And in that dream, he saw in the distance coming toward him the Panchatattva. He saw the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. He saw Jagannathas Babaji, he saw Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he saw Gorkhashwadas Babaji Maharaj, all of these great, great personalities. They were all coming to him, and their instruction was that don't worry, just continue on with your preaching works. We are there forever with you. So on that inspiration, he went out and again took up his preaching work, and very vigorously. Actually, there's many stories, many descriptions of how he would deal with asampradaya groups. He began to write prolifically. He wrote some well over 30 originals and with purports and commentaries on Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and well over 300 articles and commentaries on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's work. So he was just prolific writer. And in 1936, he made one statement that I have upset many persons' minds in the course of my preaching. And it's documented how he would sometimes be very aggressive in his preaching, to the point where people would cross the street when they saw him coming. They would cross to the other side of the street and run away. He was such an aggressive preacher. So he said that I have upset many persons' minds, but only obliged to speak the truth of service and devotion to the Supreme. And I've given many troubles, so they may turn. His purpose, of course, was so that they may turn to the face of Godhead. And surely someday they will be able to understand that. And again, we see that in the case of Srila Prabhupada also, that Srila Prabhupada was also very strong in his preaching. And sometimes, according to some persons, aggressive. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta gave certain characteristics of a preacher. And some of those are that he appreciated daring disciples. He appreciated how certain disciples would go out and they would be very daring in their preaching work. Just like we see that example in Srila Prabhupada, how Srila Prabhupada was very daring to go out across the ocean, and how Srila Prabhupada's disciples also and followers to this day are very daring to go out and present Krishna consciousness. So he very much appreciated that sort of mentality in a disciple. And he compared the conciliators, those who would want to compromise too much, he would compare them to Sandar Gopar, which is bull dung. He emphasized preciseness over politeness. And humility implies perfect submission to the truth and no sympathy for untruth. And unless one is fixed in truth, one cannot present it. So he was very strong in his preaching works, but also sometimes he would encourage a more gradual approach so as not to unnecessarily drag a conversation into some petty argument where the philosophical understanding is lost. We also have that experience also, right? All of us. In preaching to someone, sometimes you have to be a little diplomatic in order for them to and not so attacking so that they'll hear the philosophical argument that you're trying to present. So his example was don't say cow. Say an animal with four legs, tail, two horns that gives milk. So that was his compromising. I hope you can catch that. That was he was also very strong about Dham Seva. There's many, many things throughout his life that he was very much engaged in. As we see again in the case of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada was very keen on so many things, whether it be this preaching activity or that outreach program or developing ashrams or Daivi Varnashram. It was so many wonderful things throughout Srila Prabhupada's example that was actually, we can understand, exampled, given as an example to him by his own spiritual master. It was very incredible. He was very very keen on Dham Seva. He said that Chaitanya is eternally, especially in Navadvipa, Chaitanya is eternally engaged in his Sankirtan activities. And on different occasions when he was in Navadvipa, he would, in the middle of the night, call out, everyone should wake up. Can you see them? There they are. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Panchatattva and so many other devotees, they're out there chanting. Let's go see them. So the devotees would wake up in the middle of the night. They would go outside and it's pitch black. They wouldn't be able to see anything. And Chaitanya and Bhakti Sananda Maharaj would say, no, there they are. Let's go. Let's join them. Sometimes in the evening, he would just out of the just spontaneously he would wake up and go off into the fields, and certain disciples were behind him at a distance, and they could hear him talking to someone, and other divine personalities would be speaking with him, but they would look out there and there's nothing there. So, very incredible personality. And again, very staunch in all of his activities. But although a sannyasi, still, he gave some very, very strong instructions to his grihasthas. And he compared entering grihastha ashram the same as one who enters into the sannyas ashram. He gave it the same importance. How when one enters into the home, he should see it as entering into the dham. It's that important. He was very a strong enemy of bogus chanting as well. In Orissa, there were a certain all sorts of different mantras that were being chanted in Bengal also. And he was asked, what is your opinion of this chanting? One particular person is mentioned. His name was Charnadas, and he had this all sorts of bogus types of mantras, and Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati Thakur's response was that imagine you're thinking of some math problem. You're focusing on some math problem. And in focusing on that math problem, you can't hear them. You don't hear these imaginary chants. In other words, just like one may be focused on a certain complicated math issue that he's trying to resolve, and we all have that experience. When you focus on something, you can't hear anything that's going on around you. So he compared that to this chanting. We don't even listen to them. We don't pay attention. It's described that when he would go to different deity places that he would visit, he would always go there with some offering. He always had some fruit or some nuts or some kind of flower that he would always make an offering to the deity wherever he went. And he would even give donations to the beggars wherever he went. Sometimes we have this thought that, this is this is not good. Who are these bums out there in the street that are begging? Of course, it has to be taken into the context of how were they seen? How are we? What is the exchange that's there between you and that person? But he was also very liberal in that way. He would give contributions to beggars. I wanted to just wrap up very quickly here by reading a few things about the opulences of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur as given from this book, which is from a collection of writings from from Chaitanya Math. But it's all facts that we've heard. But it's very nicely complemented by some of the words here. By appearing in Puri and permeating spiritual knowledge throughout the world, he fulfilled the Shastriya prediction, hi utkale purushottamat. That's the last line of one particular shloka. Do you remember that? Basically, it means that a great personality will appear in Puri. Sampradaya vihinaye mantraste nishvalamata. Those are the first two lines. The second two lines, the last line is this. Is this, hi utkale purushottamat. And it's predicted in that shloka, which is found in the Padma Purana, that in the Kali Yuga, someone will appear to propagate the teachings of the four sampradayas. So what this is saying here is that by appearing in Puri, you've fulfilled that prediction. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as we know, in Puri, if you go to the temple there, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur had in his house, he had the four sampradayas displayed, and they're honored in a very wonderful way. So here, again, he appeared fulfilling that prediction, that in the Kali Yuga, someone would appear in Puri to again propagate the teachings of the four sampradayas. By receiving the prasad garland of Lord Jagannath, when his cart halted at the door of his father's house, and by grasping the Srimad Bhagavatam when given items to select to indicate his future inclination, he demonstrated the symptoms of an eternally perfect associate of the Supreme Lord. Sometimes grihasthas do that with their kids. Which one are you going to choose, the bracelets or the book? His natural preference for spiritual literature and his founding of the Chiptakumara Sabha during the period of his studies demonstrated him as the manifest ideal of the Bhagavatam. An intelligent person should practice Krishna consciousness from childhood. That was a quote from the Bhagavatam. From a very early age, he began to establish different sabhas or organizations where they would discuss Vedic philosophy, Vaishnav culture. He personally preached Hari Kirtan door to door and also sent devotees sprinkled with his mercy to miscellaneous places for propagating Chaitanya Vani. Through Sankirtan lectures and slideshow presentations, by opening Padarshanis, or places where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet are installed, in various regions, and thereat arranging festivals and establishing mats. Anyway, it goes on and on, which, again, we can see in the case of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada did the exact same thing. He established places of Vaishnav and bhakti throughout the world. writing profusely. It just goes on and on about so many things that he wrote. He fulfilled Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction that his name would be preached all over the world. And it's a fact. He inspired Srila Prabhupada, and by Srila Prabhupada's activities, it's gone all over the world. By censuring the false pronunciation of objects related to Krishna due to adjudging them material, he is the expert example of adopting Yukta Vairagya by always engaging those objects in activities for the satisfaction of Hari. Again, and Srila Prabhupada again is that perfect example. Of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he engaged everything. He engaged Western dress, Western travel, Western technology for preaching Krishna consciousness. Perfect example of Yukta Vairagya. He is the distributor of the unsullied light of the pure Gaudiya sun, which dispels the clouds of bad opinions of the 13 syllables of so-called Gaudiyas, the Appa Sampradayas. In other words, there were so many Sampradayas who were teaching and professing so many way-out ideas. And his whole life, as well as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, were dedicated to defeating these Asampradayas. He is the perpetual opponent of any kind of compact with Asat Siddhanta, or false philosophical conclusions. By his personal behavior, he is the best preacher of the maxim, Sarvasvam Gaurave Dadat. One should give everything, including one's very self, to one's guru. By installing the footprints of Sri Chaitanya in so many places, he awakens within the heart of all jivas an attachment to seeking Krishna through Sri Nam Sankirtan Yajna. That was his. That was the thinking that let me install these lotus feet, and in that way it'll inspire so many others to engage in the Sankirtan movement. He he is a prominent instructor in forswearing the evil desire to be I, to be big I, which is actually servitude to Mayarani, impelled by egoism to instead become good I in service to Radharani, following Mahaprabhu's principle of Trinadapi Sunichena. It goes on and on, describing some of his wonderful qualities and some of the things that he established. He is the king of doctors, the giver of the genuine understanding that health of the body and mind is achieved through health of the soul. He instructs all to constantly serve Krishna without dwelling on the past or caring for the future. So I won't go on any further, but as you can see, there's so many wonderful things about his example, and by his inspiration, Srila Prabhupada has come, and by his hard work, we have this wonderful Krishna consciousness movement. So we owe a great deal to our grandfather. Any questions or comments? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj Prabhupada ki jai.